Chapter 15, Racial, Economic, and Political Change. Chapter Preview, People. Septima Poinsett Clark, Esau Jenkins, Bernice Robinson, Martin Luther King, Jr., Cecil Ivory, Harvey Gantt, Ernest F. Hollings, Donald S. Russell, J. Drake Edens, Jr., Robert E. McNair, John C. West, James B. Edwards. Places: Johns Island, Andrews, Fort Mill, Hilton Head, Kiowa, Isle of Palms, Litchfield, De Bordeaux, Barnwell, Lamar, Denmark. Terms: Sit-in, Freedom Ride, White Flight, Great Society, Right to Work Law, Sunbelt, Urbanization, Reapportionment, Southern Strategy. Can you imagine life with no television? Can you imagine South Carolina without air conditioning? These two technological advances revolutionized the era of your parents and grandparents. For most of us, television and air conditioning are such natural parts of our lives that we hardly notice them, except when they do not work. Try to think how the two technologies changed South Carolina when they began to have an impact in the 1950s and revolutionized life in the 1960s. In many towns, air conditioning appeared first in movie theaters, followed by department stores, supermarkets, hotels, and motels. By the 1960s, many homes were equipped with air conditioners. Probably more than any other device, it was air conditioning that opened up South Carolina and the South to tourists and new residents from the North. Many more people were leaving the South than coming in before the 1960s, and then the trend reversed. Economic activity increased, worker productivity increased, and the death rate decreased. Like most historical events, these changing patterns had multiple causes, but it's hard to imagine people working harder or massive numbers of Northerners coming south without the comforts of air conditioning. Television and air conditioning changed the front porch, country store, friends and neighbors culture of South Carolina. Families retreated into their houses, enjoyed the cool, and entertained themselves with the TV. Of course, they still had something in common with their neighbors. With only one or two channels available, they were probably all watching the same programs. More importantly, they were watching the same programs as people in New York, St. Louis, Seattle, and Los Angeles. They were all being Americanized, being unconsciously made more like one another. I Love Lucy, The Lone Ranger, and Perry Mason were experiences that most Americans had in common. Television and air conditioning were only two of the forces transforming South Carolina in the 1960s and 1970s. A diversifying economy, northern investments, a war in Vietnam, and, more than anything else, the quest for racial justice were changing the culture of South Carolina. Section 1. Pivotal Social Changes. As you read, look for how South Carolina activists advanced the cause of civil rights with sit-ins, freedom rides, demonstrations, and other forms of protest. The peaceful integration of South Carolina colleges and universities, beginning with Clemson. Delayed success in the desegregation of public schools. National advances in civil rights. How the civil rights movement inspired other social protest movements. Terms: sit-in, freedom ride, white flight, great society. January 1, 1960 was the beginning of a new decade. It was also the date of a protest march by civil rights activists to the Greenville Municipal Airport. The march was an omen, sign, or warning of what lay ahead in the most pivotal decade in the civil rights struggle. The rally, led by several civil rights organizations, was to protest the rude treatment of baseball great Jackie Robinson when he entered the white waiting area of the airport on a visit to the city a few weeks before. The decade of the 1960s can be characterized as an era of protest in America, protest against segregation, racial discrimination, gender discrimination, poverty, and war. The movement for civil rights in South Carolina. The civil rights movement in South Carolina in the 1960s was based on the legal advances made by the NAACP in the two previous decades. The movement also benefited from the citizens' schools created on John's Island by Septima Poinsett Clark, Esau Jenkins, and Bernice Robinson to teach literacy and train citizens to vote. In the 1960s, they spread the citizens' schools across the South under the banner of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Many of the school's alumni were active in the civil rights movement in the 1960s. As Dr. King said, "We are engaged in a creative battle to end the long night of racial injustice." Sit-ins. There was a new sense of urgency in the new decade. A small group of students in Greensboro, North Carolina, used a little-known type of protest called the sit-in. A sit-in is a protest in which people enter a public facility and refuse to leave until their demands are met. Within weeks, all across South Carolina, in Orangeburg, Rock Hill, Sumter, Columbia, Greenville, and Charleston, college and high school students were peacefully sitting in at lunch counters. They were arrested and always convicted of trespass, being on property without permission. In Rock Hill, the Friendship Nine students from Friendship Junior College, coached by Reverend Cecil Ivory, added a new technique, staying in jail rather than paying bail while waiting for trial. The jail no bail technique filled the jails and forced the county to bear the expense of housing and feeding protesters. This tactic took courage because jail was a dangerous place for blacks, but the students were successful in bringing attention to their cause. The NAACP, led by its chief lawyer in South Carolina, Matthew Perry, appealed the convictions in all the sit-ins and protests. In a famous and important decision in 1963, Peterson et al. Versus City of Greenville, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that state enforcement of discrimination on the basis of race was in violation of the equal protection of the law guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. The protesters' convictions were overturned. By 1963, white and black leaders of several larger cities in the state were teaming up to convince business owners to stop discriminating on the basis of race. Some white leaders thought it was the right thing to do. Many were convinced that civic turmoil was bad for business. Freedom Rides. The Congress of Racial Equality, CORE, organized Freedom Rides, a series of rides through the South by integrated groups seeking to peacefully integrate the Greyhound and Trailways buses and terminals. Rock Hill was the Freedom Riders' first stop in South Carolina. On the first ride in May 1961, white men smashed the face of a black rider, John Lewis, later to become a congressman from Georgia, when he attempted to enter the white waiting room, but police intervened. Much worse treatment awaited the riders in Alabama, where white mobs attacked the buses, burned one, and badly beat many of the riders. The power of television was demonstrated as images of a burning bus and battered riders were flashed across America and the world. Within a few months, the federal government began enforcing earlier court decisions outlawing segregation in interstate commerce. Mass protest demonstrations. Another nonviolent technique of protesting segregation and discrimination was the mass protest march. In March 1961, about 1,000 students of State College and Claflin College marched in protest against discrimination in Orangeburg. About 400 were arrested and convicted of breach of peace. Matthew Perry appealed their conviction. In another case, 187 students marched on the State House grounds in Columbia. They were peaceful and orderly, but were convicted of breach of peace. Perry appealed their case to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the decision, Edwards v. South Carolina, became famous and was widely used by courts in other civil rights and civil liberty cases. The court reversed the convictions, saying, quote, "The 14th Amendment does not permit a state to make criminal the peaceful expression of unpopular views," end quote. The civil rights movement increased the boundaries of free speech and freedom of movement. But in spite of sit-ins, protest marches, and court decisions, progress toward desegregation was going slowly in most of South Carolina and the South. For example, in 1963, the state shut down its fine state park system temporarily rather than integrate the facilities. Higher education in South Carolina. Few incidents in the story of the civil rights movement in South Carolina were more dramatic than the desegregation of Clemson College, now University, in 1963. Harvey Gantt, a black student at Charleston's Burke High School, applied for admission to Clemson to study architecture. His admission was rejected. Matthew Perry filed suit in federal court in July 1962 against Clemson on Gantt's behalf. The case was tried in the fall, just after a tragic event in Oxford, Mississippi, that was to affect South Carolina deeply. The admission by court order of James Meredith, a black student, to the University of Mississippi had resulted in defiance by the governor and crowds of angry whites. The federal government sent U.S. Marshals and troops to protect Meredith. In the riot against his admission, two people were killed and 166 wounded, including 79 marshals. When the federal judge in South Carolina ruled against Gantt, Matthew Perry rushed an appeal to the U.S. Circuit Court, hoping to get Gantt admitted for the spring semester beginning in February. The U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, Virginia, ruled on January 21, 1963, in Gantt's favor, and the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the ruling on the same day. The legal way was clear to admit Gantt. Now the burden was on the leadership of the state to comply with the law and oversee a peaceful transition at Clemson. Most political, business, and religious leaders wanted to make sure nothing like Oxford, Mississippi happened in South Carolina. The retiring Democratic governor, Ernest F. Hollings, had been elected in 1958 as a segregationist, but in his farewell address as governor, he took a very different tone. He declared the state had run out of courts and begged Carolinians to be calm and obey the law. "This should be done with dignity," he said. "It must be done with law and order." The new governor, Donald S. Russell, former president of USC, pledged peaceful compliance with the court orders. Prominent business leaders spoke out for calm acceptance of the court decrees. Leaders of 10 church denominations reminded Christians that we are bound by the law of love, should avoid every form of violence and hatred, and should do unto every man as we would have him do unto us. The newspapers of the state generally promoted order while insisting on continued efforts to hold the line against further integration. Thus, most of the establishment entered into what conservative attorney and longtime South Carolina Senate leader Edgar Brown called a conspiracy for peace. But not all Carolinians were in agreement. Former Governor James F. Burns, once a U.S. Supreme Court justice himself, was highly critical of the court. Senator Strom Thurmond spoke of the glaring stupidity of the Supreme Court's decision. State Representative A. W. Red Bethea and State Senator John D. Long proposed closing Clemson rather than submitting to political slavery. Cooler heads prevailed, and Clemson accepted its first African-American student peacefully. The State Law Enforcement Division, SLED, and the Highway Patrol were at Clemson in force, not to prevent Gantt's admission, but to make it happen in an orderly fashion. Clemson agreed to accept students in the future without regard to race. In the fall of 1963, more black students joined Gantt at Clemson, and three were admitted by court order to USC without incident. One of these USC students, Henry Monteith, became a prominent medical doctor. Another, James Solomon, later served as head of the South Carolina Department of Social Services. The state that a century earlier had rebelled against the United States now accepted desegregation of colleges with dignity and a minimum of disruption. South Carolina's leadership had seen the methods of Mississippi and Alabama as destructive of social order and bad for business. They realized that business investors they were trying to attract into the state liked calm, order, and predictability. Public education in South Carolina. White parents and the general public felt more strongly about protecting schools from desegregation than they felt about colleges, parks, lunch counters, and theaters. Their passion made desegregation of public schools the most difficult task of civil rights activists, black parents, and federal courts. Even with the Brown v. Board of Education decision of 1954, the state was able to avoid any racial mixing in the schools well into the 1960s. Real integration was to wait until 1970. South Carolina was the last holdout against the requirement of the law. The first crack in the segregation of the state's public schools was in Charleston, where a judge ordered that 11 black students be admitted in the fall of 1963 to the white elementary school where they had applied. Other black students would be able to choose their schools in the fall of 1964. This freedom of choice system, widely applied across the South, was something of a trap. It allowed token integration, that is, a few black students could get into a white school. But they had to be courageous, and their parents had to withstand the economic retaliation of employers or landlords. All the burden of change fell on the black families. Civil rights advocates wanted the school system to bear that burden. School administrators should be responsible for planning the true integration of all students into all the schools, placing white and black teachers in all the schools, and transporting all students to the schools. Desegregation of public schools went very slowly from 1963 until 1968. Only then did a new Supreme Court decision in a Virginia case, Green v. New Kent County, throw out freedom of choice and order immediate movement from a dual system to a unitary integrated system. South Carolina had to begin a unitary school system in 1970, 16 years after Brown v. Board of Education. The reaction of many whites to school integration was to try to escape it. One method city dwellers used was to move to virtually all white suburbs where few blacks could afford to live. It was called white flight. Another method, especially popular in rural counties, was creation of private, segregated academies. The number of private schools ballooned in the late 60s and 70s. The National Movement for Civil Rights. Across the South and later in the North, men like Martin Luther King, Jr. of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference led protest marches and demonstrations for racial justice and equality. On August 28, 1963, King, Roy Wilkins of the NAACP, and other civil rights leaders organized a massive march on Washington to protest in the nation's capital for an end to discrimination. This march dramatized the movement and helped push the federal government to take action to enforce the 14th and 15th Amendments. The Civil Rights Act of 1964. There were several reasons the Civil Rights Act of 1964 passed the Congress. The persistent protest of thousands of individuals got Congress's attention. The legal cases brought by the NAACP showed that equal treatment of citizens was required under the Constitution. This was the most important civil rights legislation since Reconstruction. It outlawed discrimination in employment opportunities and access to public accommodations on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. The Act has been a major asset for the protection of equal rights for blacks and for women. For example, by 1970, about 1 in 4 textile workers in South Carolina was black, whereas almost no blacks had been hired before 1964. The 24th Amendment. The 24th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was also adopted in 1964. This amendment prohibited any government from denying a citizen the right to vote because of failure to pay a poll tax or any other tax. Poll taxes had been used traditionally by southern states as one tool for keeping blacks and poor people from voting. South Carolina had repealed the poll tax in 1951. The Voting Rights Act of 1965. In town after town in the mid-1960s, white-only and colored-only signs started to come down. But there were still major obstacles to African Americans voting: literacy tests, rigid voter registrars, and economic intimidation by employers and landlords. The federal government stepped in with the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The act removed literacy requirements for voting and set up a powerful means of enforcing the 15th Amendment. South Carolina and other southern states where racial discrimination had occurred were required to get the approval of the U.S. Department of Justice for any changes in their election laws. The act also allowed federal registrars to go into communities with uncooperative voting officials and register voters. After the act, black voters began to play an important part in South Carolina politics. Other social protest movements. The civil rights movement inspired other efforts to bring about change. The early post-war baby boomers were now swelling the ranks of college students. Many were restless under restrictive rules of college life and courses they thought were unneeded. A youth rebellion, using the tactics of the civil rights movement, would change those rules and introduce new study programs such as women's studies and African American studies. Youth movements. The youth started a cultural revolution. They changed the way America dressed. Faded blue jeans and tie-dyed shirts, sandals, and miniskirts were their new style. Eventually, most Americans at least began to loosen their neckties and dress less formally. All standards set by the older generation were to be questioned. One youth motto was, "Don't trust anyone over 30." Experimentation with drugs was widespread. Music was an important part of the youth scene. Folk singers Joan Baez, Pete Seeger, and Bob Dylan were popular for their protest songs. The Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the Grateful Dead became the new standards of rock, and their lyrics were sufficiently offensive to the over 30 folks. The youth still danced the twist, made popular in the early 60s by Chubby Checker, a native of Andrews. The youth movement was most serious in its protest against American involvement in a civil war in Vietnam. President Johnson claimed it was necessary to prevent the spread of communism. "We sent combat troops in 1965, and by 1968, over 500,000 American troops were fighting in Vietnam." The anti-war protest included a mass march at the Pentagon, the command center of the Defense Department, teach-ins and sit-ins at universities, and demonstrations against Reserve Officer Training Corps, ROTC, programs. One protest in 1970 at Kent State University in Ohio resulted in the National Guard killing 4 students. America was bitterly divided over Vietnam until a truce was arranged in 1973 after 58,209 Americans had died. Vietnam became a communist nation. The Women's Movement. Women working in the other protest movements noticed that men made the decisions while women made the coffee. acceptance of a position of inferiority in society was no longer acceptable to most American women. Being expected to only become a teacher or a nurse, to be a full-time mother or homemaker like the stereotypes on television sitcoms, would no longer do. Almost by accident, women were included in the protection of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Women began to use the law to fight for equal rights for equal work. They demanded daycare facilities for their children and more effective laws against assault. Many fought against state laws banning abortions. More women began to go into male professions as lawyers and doctors. In 1972, Congress passed the Equal Rights Amendment, ERA, designed to cement gender equality into the Constitution. After several years of struggle to gain ratification, not enough states approved the amendment. South Carolina was among those states that rejected it. Some women objected to it because they feared it would nullify laws providing special protections for women. Other minority movements. Several ethnic and national groups, inspired by the civil rights movement, sought greater recognition, respect, and treatment. The Civil Rights Act of 1968 gave back to Indian tribes broad rights to self-government within the reservations. In 1980, the Catawba tribe, led by Chief Gilbert Blue, sued for return of 144,000 acres in York, Lancaster, and Chester counties that they claimed had been taken from them in 1840. The awkward part was that Rock Hill, Fort Mill, and part of Carowinds Amusement Park were on the property. The suit was finally settled by an act of Congress in 1993. The tribe received $50 million plus a 3,600-acre reservation with rights to run a high-stakes bingo operation. The Catawba also regained federal recognition as a tribe. The Anti-Poverty Movement. Despite the post-war prosperity, still in the 1960s, nearly one-third of Americans lived in poverty. President Lyndon B. Johnson began a war on poverty in 1964 as part of his Great Society program, which was the most massive federal effort to deal with economic problems since the New Deal. The Great Society included creation of the Office of Economic Opportunity, the Job Corps, and the Student Work-Study Program to help the unemployed get jobs. Medicare was set up to subsidize health care for the elderly and Medicaid for low-income families. Head Start and many other federal aid-to-education programs were begun. Even these massive efforts were too little. Martin Luther King, Jr. was turning his attention to the problem of poverty. He was gearing up for a Poor People's March on Washington in 1968 when he was assassinated. In South Carolina, Senator Ernest F. Hollings led a hunger tour in 1969, which showed dramatically that problems of poverty and hunger were not yet solved. He led the national media to some of the poorest communities in the state, exposing them to a national television audience. Hollings wrote a book called The Case Against Hunger that promoted more government assistance for people in hunger, including a school breakfast program. Do you remember? 1. Define in sentence form, sit in, freedom ride, white flight. 2. What was the Civil Rights Act of 1964? 3. Which other social protest movements happened in the 1960s?